The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, Glenn Langan stars as KOP News Director Chuck Morgan, investigating the Mafia on an episode of Stand By for Crime. We'll also hear Mars is Heaven on an episode of X-1. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the golden age of radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Glenn Langan stars as KOP News Director Chuck Morgan, investigating the Mafia in Los Angeles on an episode of Stand By for Crime, as WMKY presents the golden age of radio.
Stand by for crime.
Hi, Chuck Morgan, KOP newscaster speaking. The other day, while shooting a round of golf with my friend Lieutenant Bill Meggs of police headquarters, I learned something that surprised me, and I'm sure will surprise you as well. That is that the Mafia, or Black Hand, is still actively operating in this and other countries. You know, the Mafia originated in Sicily several hundred years ago. It was originally designed to protect the common people against the tyranny of landowners and royalty. But today, members of the Mafia are a bunch of gangsters, thugs, murderers, and lesser criminals who use it to further their own ends. The most effective weapon they have is fear, instilling fear in the hearts of their victims. Well, the story I'd like to tell you about tonight is a good example of how the Mafia works. Carol Curtis, my blonde secretary, and I were having dinner at Nick Adele's following my 7 o'clock broadcast, and we're wondering what kind of a feature yarn I could use on the 11 o'clock show.
How about those two jokers who think they're going to race their hot rods up Mount Wilson? Maybe you could build that into something. They're both war veterans, and... Chuck?
Hmm? Oh, what were you saying, Grandmapuss?
What was I saying, Grandmapuss? For heaven's sakes, why can't you pay attention when I beat my brains out trying to... What in the world are you staring at?
That man talking to Nick. I think he wants to see me. Yeah. Nick just pointed this way and he's coming over.
He looks scared to death. Do you know him?
No, total stranger. There's something wrong with him, that's for sure.
Are you Mr. Chuck Morgan?
Yeah, that's right. I'm Morgan.
Can I talk to you a minute?
Sure. Sit down.
Alone.
Oh, pardon me.
Sit still, Glamorous. This is my secretary, Carol Curtis. She's harmless.
Thanks, pal.
I'm sorry, Miss Curtis. I didn't mean to be rude.
Sit down. Tell us what's on your mind.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you. My name's Frank Dawson. You've never heard of me. I'm just an ordinary person, clothing store clerk.
What's on your mind, Frank?
Well, it's taken me a long time to work up enough courage to tell somebody this. You see, I'm a very frightened man.
Oh, that's easy to see.
Is it as obvious as that? I try to cover it up, but it's no use.
You sound like a man whose conscience has been bothering you, and you can't take it any longer.
Yes, that's it exactly. You see, 4 nights ago, I witnessed a murder. I saw Elmer Hatfield shot to death.
Elmer Hatfield? Well, he's the councilman who was murdered for cracking down on rackets around town.
Yeah, and the police have been in a sweat trying to find out who did it. Did you recognize the man who fired the shots, Frank?
No, but I recognized the man who was driving the getaway car.
Uh-huh. Who was that?
Jack Stone.
Now we've got a real fine situation. Jack Stone, head of the gambling syndicate, huh? Well, the logical suspect for the killer of the man who was trying to undermine his gravy train.
You must have a good reason for not going to the police with this information.
Yes, I have a good reason, Miss Curtis, a very good reason. And it's here on this card.
Dawson reached into his pocket, took out a small white card, and laid it face up on the table. There was nothing on the card, except for the imprint of a black hand. If hadn't told me that story about the mafia or Black Hand, I would have thought this was some corny routine being played by a practical joker. But Bill had told me the story, and had showed me facts and figures. And here was this Frank Dawson looking dead serious and scared to death. And there was that white square of card with the imprint of the Black Hand on it lying between us on the table.
Well, that's nothing but a picture of Black Hand. Does it mean something? It
means plenty, Glamopus. Haven't you ever heard of the mafia?
No. Have you?
Certainly.
When?
Last week.
Oh, last week.
Yeah.
Well, how about that? Acting as though you'd known about it all your life. Well, my goodness.
That's enough, Glamopus. So that's why you haven't gone to the police, eh, Mr. Dawson? You're afraid of what will happen to you if you do.
Telephone call for Scrappy Lambert.
Well, not what will happen to me. I think I could take it. But I have a wife and two kids, and I'd do anything to protect them.
Even if it's refusing to do your duty as a citizen?
My first duty is to my family, Mr. Morgan.
Yeah, same old story. Same old runaround. It always works.
Well, what do you expect Chuck to do, Mr. Dawson? And if he does it, won't you be endangering your family as much as though you told the police?
Well, I hope that... Well, that...
That I wouldn't let it be known you'd told me, huh? That somehow I'd have Jack Stone arrested and charged with Hatfield's murder without bringing your name into it. Just how do you expect me to do that? You're the only witness to the crime. The police haven't got enough evidence to arrest Stone on suspicion, let alone to convict him. No, I'm afraid without you to testify, Frank, it's a dead issue.
I can't, and I won't. They'll take my little girl. They told me they would.
Who told you?
The man who gave me the card. I didn't know that they'd even seen me. When I heard the shots and saw what was happening, I ducked into a doorway. Then the man who had done the shooting came running out of an alley and jumped into the car that Jack Stone was driving. They roared away and... Then the other people in the cars appeared, and all I could think of was to get out of there and go home. And so I started, running most of the way. I was almost there when a car came up behind me and...
Hey, you! Hold it!
Were you calling me?
Yeah, I was calling you. What's your name?
Well, I don't know why I have to answer that. Don't.
What's your name?
It's Frank Dawson.
Where do you live? Come on, talk.
Two houses down the street. But don't hit me again.
And talk pretty. Where'd you come from just now?
From work. I'm a clothing store clerk. The store stays open Friday nights.
Yeah? Where's this store located?
It's on the corner of Melrose and Catherine.
Melrose and Catherine, eh? Then you must have walked down Catherine to get here, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
You're the guy, all right. What'd you see in that alley?
I didn't see anything.
You... What'd you see?
Nothing. I didn't see a thing.
What'd you see?
Nothing. I didn't see...
What'd you see?
Don't hit me again.
And talk.
I saw the shooting.
That's better. You got any kids, Dawson?
Yes. Two.
No kidding. Kind of make you feel bad if anything happened to them, wouldn't it?
Oh, no. No, you can't. You mustn't. My kids didn't do anything. You can do what you want to me, but don't touch my kids.
I thought so. You and your old lady would be kind of put out if one of those kids should disappear and you never saw him again, wouldn't you?
Why, you dirty...
Not so fast, Jim. Just take it easy. I'll break you in two. You want some more?
It's my kids.
Nothing will happen to your kids if you're smart. Now, let's have a little rehearsal. What'd you see tonight?
I saw the shooting.
You saw what?
Nothing. I didn't see anything.
That's better. Just remember, you didn't see nothing. Not a thing. You didn't even come home that way. You walked down another street. Get it?
All right. I walked down another street.
And don't forget it. You walked down another street and you didn't see nothing. Remember it, and nothing will happen to your kids. forget it, and one of them will be dead. You get that straight?
Yes, I understand.
Good. And just so you won't have a lapse of memory, here's something to keep it...
What did this character look like, Fred?
He was a big man with sandy hair and a kind of a flat nose. Well, he must have weighed well over 200.
Yeah, that'd be Doc Zerbe, Jack Stone's first lieutenant. Was Stone in the car?
No. Zerbe must have dropped Stone and then cruised around until he saw a lone man hurrying home. In another 2 minutes, I would have been safe.
Oh, how about the card with the black hand on it? When did he give you that?
I found it in my jacket pocket after I got home. I don't know how long I lay there on the sidewalk. And when I came to, the man and the car were gone. Somehow, I reached the house and I got inside without Sue and the kids seeing me. I went up to the bathroom. I wanted to clean up as best I could. And I found the card when I took off my jacket.
Did you tell your wife what had happened?
No, I was afraid she might call the police.
But how did you explain the bruises on your face?
Oh, I told her I got into a fight at the store.
And she believed you?
No, but Sue's pretty understanding. She knows something is wrong. She's just waiting for me to tell her.
Telephone call for Mr. Frank Dawson, Hillside number.
That telephone call's for you, Mr. Dawson.
For me? Why, nobody knows I'm here.
Somebody does. You better answer.
Oh, yes, I'd better. Excuse me a moment, please.
So Dawson went off to answer the telephone. And I had an uneasy feeling that the message he was about to receive wasn't going to be good. He thought that no one knew he was here. So what did that mean? It meant that he'd been watched ever since the night of the murder, just in case he was foolish enough to think he could get away with telling his story to the police or someone else. So Carol and I waited, and both of us were thinking the same thing. We knew the minute Frank Dawson returned to the table, the worst had happened. Dawson was wild-eyed and his mouth was trembling.
They've taken little Sue. They've kidnapped her. They told me that unless you promised to forget everything I told you, that I'd never see her again.
Sit down, Dawson. You're attracting attention.
But they've taken Sue. Don't you understand what that means? I was
Sit
a fool.
Sit down. Get hold of yourself. We'll get your youngster back.
You won't go to the police, though, will you, Mr. Morgan? They'll kill her if you do. No, promise me you won't.
Not while they have Sue, I won't.
Oh, Chuck, this is terrible. What if you don't tell the police? That isn't going to get Mr. Dawson's little girl back. And when Mrs. Dawson finds out that Sue is missing, she isn't going to keep quiet.
I know, you're right, Clampus. Whatever we do, we'll have to work fast. Frank, do you think you can keep your wife from reporting Sue's disappearance for 24 hours?
Well, I don't know. I'll have to make up some story about taking Sue to see her grandmother or something. I don't know.
You'd better think up a story and sell it to your wife if you ever want to see your youngster again.
But, Chuck, 24 hours is so short a time. You can't possibly do anything.
Maybe no, maybe yes. Every man has a weakness, no matter how tough or cold-blooded he is. If my memory serves me right, Jack Stone's weakness is a nightclub singer named Bubbles Deering.
Do you mean that redhead at the Silver Slipper?
Yeah, that's the one. She's Jack's girl, and he's nuts about her. Wonder how he'd feel if she were kidnapped.
Oh, Chuck, for heaven's sakes. You're not thinking of kidnapping a full-grown woman.
No, not kidnapping. I have something else in mind.
The conclusion of Stand By for Crime.
I haven't any illusions about my personal charm, but as a news reporter, it's my business to know all I can about what goes on in the underworld. The story about Jack Stone and his girl, Bubbles Deering, was common gossip. He'd imported her from New York about a year ago. And she hadn't been working at the Silver Slipper a month before he let it become known that Bubbles was his private property. A couple of guys had argued the point, but now they're in no position to argue or do anything else. So Jack Stone's chain of armor developed a weak link, huh? Well, if it was weak as I hoped, I might be able to cash in on it. So I sent Carol back to KOP with instructions to have a sub do my 11 o'clock broadcast if I didn't show up. And then drove out to the strip where the Silver Slipper was located. I caught the tail end of the first floor show, which featured Bubbles doing her song and dance routine. And sitting alone on the edge of the dance floor, I did my best to let her know her act was being appreciated. I had the feeling she was aware of my presence. Afterward, I went backstage and found a door with a star on it.
Yeah, who is it?
Hello, Bubbles.
What?
Hey, what are you doing here?
Oh, I just thought I'd drop around and tell you how much I enjoyed your act.
Yeah? Well, now you told me, get out.
Wait a minute. I've got a proposition to make.
I ain't interested in no proposition. Hey, does Jack know you're here?
Jack? Who?
Jack Stone, the guy who owns this place. Ain't you never heard of him?
Well, now that you mention his name, I guess I have.
Huh. You better had. The last guy who came prancing in here is dead.
Sure, it's like that, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that. Now, if you're smart, you'll beat it.
Well, I appreciate the warning, but first I've got to state my proposition. How about coming to work up in San Francisco for me at twice your present salary?
Hmm? Say, who are you?
My name's Jones. Bill Jones. I own the High Tide Club in San Francisco.
Never heard of it.
Ever been to San Francisco?
No.
Yeah, that explains it.
Okay, so all right, I ain't been around. And I ain't interested in getting around.
What's the matter, Bubbles? Scared?
Scared me? What?
Jack Stone.
Jack Stone? Oh, it's a laugh. Hey, listen, Buster, I got news for you. I'm Jack Stone's girl. He's in love with me, see?
Are you in love with him, Bubbles? Or do you just hang around here because you're scared of what will happen if you leave?
I ain't scared of nothing. I tell you nothing.
How do you like being someone's personal property, Bubbles? Not being able to even talk to another man. Only going out when Jack Stone says so. And then only to the places he chooses. You can't call your soul your own, can you, Bubbles?
Ah, you're crazy. You're talking yourself right into a dose of lead poisoning.
Pretty dull routine for a girl as young and pretty as yourself. What you need is freedom to move around without the knowledge that you're being spied on, without being afraid all the time.
Yeah? You think I'll get that freedom in San Francisco? Jack's got connections up there, too.
Not as good as mine. Stone may be a big shot down here, but up there he's small fry.
You mean I wouldn't have to go around looking over my shoulder all the time? You mean I'd have protection?
Plenty. You'd be as free as a breezes.
Huh. I don't know. The guy's got me pegged. He'd follow me no matter where I went. He'd kill me. He said so. No, I ain't taking the risk.
Well, you better think it over, Bubbles. It's probably the only chance you'll have to get out of this trap.
Trap? Huh. Yeah, that's it. I'm trapped in this stinking club till Jack Stone gets tired of me and throws me aside. I can't go no place. I can't talk to nobody but Jack Stone and a couple of old biddies who wait on me. I hate it.
Of course you do, Bubbles. Any normal girl would. Now, up in San Francisco, you do.
Yeah, how am I going to get up there? Yeah, how am I going to get out of here? Look, he's got guys watching me all the time.
Yeah? Well, then they're pretty lax. No one saw me coming in here. Now, look. There's a plane for the north leaving Burbank in an hour. That'll give you time to go home and pack and get over to Lockheed. I'll meet you in the St. Francis Hotel tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, and well, suppose one of Jack's boys asked me where I'm going.
Jack's out of town in San Diego. I checked that before coming in here. But if anyone asks you questions, tell him you had a phone call from him. He wants you to join him in San Diego.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, you know it might work at that.
Sure.
Well, it just might. Hey, Jonesy, you made yourself a deal. Huh? See you at the St. Francis tomorrow.
Well, maybe this would work and maybe it wouldn't. Anyway, it was the best I could think of at the moment. Bubbles was on her way up north and no one knew where she was going but me. I went back to KOP and found Frank Dawson in the waiting room of my office with Carol.
Any luck, Chuck?
Yeah, I'm doing all right, I think.
Did Bubbles fall for that winning smile of yours?
No, never mind that. Go find Pappy and tell him to put on a sub for my 11 o'clock show.
Well, where are you going to be at 11 o'clock?
At the Silver Slipper, picking up Sue. Now, get going. And remember, both of you, not a word to anyone, not even Pappy. It would ruin everything. So I went into my private office and called Lockheed Airport in Burbank and asked if Flight 183 had gotten off all right. They said it was just leaving the ground. So that was that. The gorgeous Bubbles was out of reach for at least an hour and three quarters. So then I began dialing the Silver Slipper.
Silver Slipper?
I want to talk to Doc Zerbe.
This is Zerbe. Who's calling?
Chuck Morgan, KOP newscaster.
Oh, yeah? What's on your mind, Morgan? Going to give us a little publicity for a change?
Yeah, that's exactly what I have in mind, Doc. I don't suppose you have a guest over there named Sue Dawson.
Never heard of her. Why? She's somebody important.
Yeah, she is. You know, we've a guest over here named Bubbles Deering. Thought you might like to know.
What the devil are you talking about?
Just what you think, Doc. Shall we make a deal?
You're nuts. Bubbles is on the floor right now doing her turn.
That's so. But suppose you take a look and see.
Well, hang on.
Sure. So Doc took a look. I could hear a door bang and loud voices at the other end of the wire. Then Doc was back on the phone again.
Morgan, you dirty rat. If you snatch that babe, you'll get a bullet through your head. You know that, don't you?
And if Bubbles isn't at the Silver Slipper when Stone gets back from Dago, you'll get a bullet through your head. You know that, don't you, Doc?
What's the deal?
Bring the kid to that office where you are right now. I'll be over and pick her up in 15 minutes.
What about Bubbles?
As soon as Sue's safe at home, I'll give you a ring and tell you where Bubbles is.
How do I know it won't be a double cross?
You don't. But the way I look at it, you haven't got much choice in the matter, have you, Doc?
Okay. Be here in 15 minutes. We'll have the kid.
I knew what Doc was thinking. He was thinking he could snatch one of Dawson's kids any time, but he couldn't get Bubbles back any time, and he wasn't hankering for a hole in the head. So I told Carol and Frank Dawson to sit tight, and I drove out to the Silver Slipper again. The second show of the evening was over, and the handkerchief-sized dance floor was mobbed. I wandered around until I found a door that looked as though it might lead to an office. It did. Inside, Doc Zerby and a couple of his strong-arm boys were sprawled out in chairs. There wasn't any youngster in evidence, and I didn't like the sneering expression on Doc Zerby's face. I started to say something, and just then, a door across the room opened, and Bubbles Deering walked in. Well, there wasn't much time to figure out a plan of action. One thing I was doggone sure of, Bubbles wasn't on that plane to San Francisco, and that meant I was a dead duck. Doc Zerby started to speak, and one of his boys reached toward his gun. I put my hand behind me, jerked open the door, and jumped backwards, banging it shut. But instead of trying to lose myself in the crowded room, I flattened against the wall behind the door. The door banged open, and Zerby, his two boys, and Bubbles came pouring out. I jumped inside the office again, slammed the door, and locked it. Then I sprinted for the door through which Bubbles had entered, found myself in another room, and also found myself staring down at the tear-stained face of Susie Dawson. There was a window that opened onto an alley. I threw a chair into it, picked up Susie, and dropped into the alley. Just as the rear door of the club opened and Zerby and his boys came out. They started for me and I started for Sunset Boulevard holding Susie. A couple of bullets passed too close for comfort, then someone was yelling.
Chuck, Chuck, this way.
It was Glamopus. She was getting out of a squad car that had just pulled up to the curb. Bill Meggs and a bunch of cops and Frank Dawson were all on the sidewalk. I was within 10 feet of them when, of course, I had to stumble. I went down and cracked my head on the pavement trying to keep Susie from getting hurt. That was the last I knew for quite a while. When I came to, I was in the back seat of the squad car, my head on Carol's lap. A cop was driving.
Oh, what the...
Hi, Chucky boy.
Oh. I thought I told you to stay back at the office.
Aren't you glad I didn't?
No. I mean, yes. How'd you know where I was?
Well, you told me, remember? Besides that, I listened in on the extension phone to your conversation with Doc Zerby.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And that's how I knew Susie would be at the Silver Slipper, and it would be all right to tell the police.
I wonder why I didn't think of that.
Because you're honest, Chucky boy. You made a deal with Doc, and you intended to keep it. You're honest and good and fine.
Shut up. Where's Susie?
She went home with her father.
Where's Doc and his boys?
In jail.
Where's Bill Meggs?
He went to the airport to meet Jack Stone.
Where's Bubbles?
Oh, she's gone somewhere to make reservations on a plane for San Francisco tomorrow. She said every seat was taken on flight 183. And she says she has to be at the St. Francis Hotel tomorrow to meet a man named Jones.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. That's what she said.
That reminds me.
What?
I have to be in San Francisco tomorrow myself. A very important date at the St. Francis Hotel.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, featuring Glenn Langan as KOP News Director Chuck Morgan and Adele Juergens as Carol Curtis on an episode of Stand By for Crime. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Thank you. Welcome back to the golden age of radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Right now, an exciting story written by Ray Bradbury entitled Mars is Heaven on this program of X-1 from 1955 on the golden age of radio.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, -4, -3, -2, X-1. Fire! From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years, on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents X-1. Tonight's story, Mars is Heaven. When the first space rocket lands on Mars, what will we find? Only the ruins of a dead and deserted planet? Or will there be life? Intelligent life in some strange form that we can only imagine? Will we be welcomed with open arms? Or will the Martians treat us as invaders? Only one thing is certain. Someday, a giant metal ship will take off from Earth to travel through the black velocities, the silent gulfs of space, to descend at last into the darkness of the upper Martian atmospheres. And on that day, man will finally know the answers. The day we first land on Mars.
Now hear this, now hear this, approaching critical deceleration. Fasten gravity suits, stand by to land.
There it is. We've intersected the course vector, sir.
All right, Mr. Lustig. Over to manual control.
Aye, sir.
Masters, sound general quarters.
Aye, sir.
Mr. Lustig, what do you make of the terrain?
There seems to be a heavy ground, Miss Captain. We won't be able to use the infrared lights.
And we'll have to come in on radar.
Isn't that a little risky, sir? Landing in the dark?
I'd rather run the danger of a blind landing, Lieutenant, than come in without the cover of darkness. Remember, we don't know what kind of reception is waiting for us down there.
Airspeed 500. Altitude now 4,000.
Bridge to engine room. Stand by for deceleration. Fire forward tubes 1 and 3. Steady as she goes, Mr. Lustig.
As she goes, sir.
Airspeed 100. Altitude 1,000.
Radar indicates a level stretch dead ahead, sir.
Skids down.
Skids checked.
Altitude 500. 4. 350. 3.
Up a point now. All right. Let's set her down. The power. Masters, quiet battle stations.
Aye, sir. All secured, sir.
Well, gentlemen, we're now on Mars, April 20th, 1987, 4:33 Greenwich time. Enter that in the log, Masters.
Aye, sir.
Well, gentlemen, it's less than 2 hours till dawn. As soon as it's light, we'll send out a landing party. Masters, get me an all-over hookup.
We're all set, Captain.
Now hear this. All right, men. The smoking lamp is lit. Well, we're on Mars. The first man shipped from Earth to land here. We don't know what we're going to find or what dangers we may face. We're 17 men on an alien world. And it's up to us whether we ever get home again. The next few hours should tell the story. And I want instant obedience to all commands. I'll court-martial the first man who doesn't jump to when he's ordered. And one other thing. We may be on Mars, but this is still a United States naval vessel. Officers will conduct a personal and weapons inspection in 1 hour. That's all.
An inspection, Captain? Now?
Mr. Lustig, we've got an hour and a half to sweat out before we find out what's outside that airlock. I'd rather have a man worried about his stripes than about what's waiting outside on Mars.
Now hear this. Landing party report to forward airlock. Captain Black, Lieutenant Hingston, Lieutenant Lustig, and Dr. Horst. Report immediately to forward airlock. It's now landing time, minus five.
Well, they're paging us. You ready, Dr. Horst?
Yes, Mr. Lustig. As ready as I will ever be.
Come on, let's get in the lock. Hingston, Lustig, and Horst reporting in the airlock.
Very well, sir. The captain will join you.
Four minutes to go. At least the captain would get here.
What difference does it make?
I just want to get it over with, that's all. Anybody got a cigarette?
Yeah, I think you're smoking too much, Lieutenant Lustig. Are you nervous?
I offer you, Horst.
Wondering what's hidden outside underneath that ground mist? I've been giving it some thought. It'll be very interesting to find out. A very unusual planet, Mars.
Why?
It has an atmosphere. A wonderful thing, an atmosphere. Where you find one, you find life.
You mean Martians? What do you think they'll look like?
Who knows? Intelligent life can take many forms.
You mean they may have green skins and eyes on stalks or something?
The comic book conception is possible, of course. Or they may have developed far beyond us. Perhaps they have a science that can produce weapons far more dangerous than our atomic missiles.
You think we may have to fight our way up?
After all, we are invaders.
Now hear this. Landing time minus two.
All right, all right. We heard this. You know what I'd like to find outside that airlock? Good old Illinois. Ever been there, Lustig?
Only Chicago.
Well, you ought to see my hometown. Green lawns, big white houses.
Sounds like my hometown.
My grandmother used to have one of those iron deer on the lawn. Every Halloween, we'd paint another color. One time, we painted it black and white like a Holstein cow.
Where does your family live, Dr. Horst?
I have no family. When I was a child, they were gassed to death in the Dachau concentration camp.
Oh, tough.
No, it has its advantages. I have no ties on Earth. Nothing to lose now. I imagine I'm the only one on board who is free to enjoy our present peculiar position.
All right, masters, you can button it up now.
Aye, sir.
Well, gentlemen, check your sidearms. In 1 minute, we'll be the first men to set foot on Mars. Quite an honor, eh?
As long as the medals are not awarded posthumously.
Still uneasy, Dr. Horst?
Captain Black, I've been uneasy ever since I can remember. On Earth and on Mars.
Well, 30 seconds. Give me the intercom phone, Lustig.
Yes, sir.
Masters.
Aye, sir.
Battle stations are to be manned until we return. If we're not back in 2 hours, I want no rescue party sent out. Blast off and save the ship, you understand?
Aye, sir.
All right. 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Lustig, open the outer airlock.
Aye, sir.
Fresh air.
Let's go. All right, now, take it easy. It's too dark to move fast.
Quiet, isn't it? Not even a wind. Can't see anything from this ground mist.
Quiet.
We don't know what's out here. All right, come on.
What the...
Quiet. Captain, I could swear that... That sounds like a rooster.
I don't hear it anymore.
Very homely but unlikely sound. A rooster crowing on Mars?
Higston.
Aye, sir.
Set that machine gun 25 yards to the flank. We'll stay here till the ground mist lifts.
Aye, sir.
What do you make of the ground, Horse?
Grass. Plain grass. You can see some large foliage there where the mist's thinned out.
What the... Higston, hold your fire, you fool!
I hit it, Captain.
What?
Some kind of wild animal. I hit it. I could see the tracers, but it's still standing.
Come on, Horst. Doctor, where are you?
Up ahead, admiring the wild animal.
Careful, Horst. Wait for us.
Don't worry, Captain. It's an iron deer. A lawn ornament.
Well, that's impossible.
It's hollow. Interesting, isn't it? A whitewashed Victorian iron deer sitting on a lawn in the middle of Mars.
I don't understand.
Look around. The mist's lifting.
Hey, Captain, look there. It's a house, a regular old-fashioned house.
But, sir, on Mars...
Good Lord. I haven't seen carved scrolls and gingerbread like that in years. Look at that porch swing. The geraniums.
There. I told you it was a rooster, Captain.
Give me the glasses, Lustig. I want to take a look through that front window. Well, there's an upright piano. Some sheet music on it. Lustig, it's beautiful Ohio.
It can't be, sir.
Horst. Horst, do you think that civilization of two planets could be identical?
I don't know. That specific variety of geraniums is only 50 years old on Earth.
Is it logical that they should develop in Mars? How about that porch swing and the piano and beautiful Ohio? Why, it's impossible.
Captain Black, this looks like the town I was born in.
Well, it looks like my hometown, too.
I thought of something, sir. It's the only solution. Maybe we're not the first ship to reach Mars from Earth.
Don't be ridiculous, Lustig.
Oh, how else can you explain it? Suppose some scientists got together. They invented some spaceship and planted a colony here. That's the only answer.
That's impossible, Lustig. Been space travel, it couldn't be secret. Do you have any idea what ships cost, what industrial power is needed? No, there's got to be some logical reason.
I think perhaps we might find out, Captain. The light just went on in that house.
Kingston, cover that door with a machine gun.
Aye, sir.
All right, come on, Horst. We're going to ring that doorbell. There's got to be a scientific answer to all this.
And there's something moving in there.
Stand back, Horst. Give me a clear shot.
Are you sure a bullet can stop a Martian?
Steady now.
Can I help you? If you're selling anything, it's much too early.
No, wait just a minute. What town is this?
What do you mean? Are you census takers?
No. We're strangers here. We want to know how this town got here.
Is this a game?
No, it's not a game. We're from Earth.
From where?
From Earth.
Do you mean out of the ground? Are you sure you're feeling well?
Madam, we came in a flying ship across space. We're from the third planet, Earth. This is Mars. Now do you understand? Mars.
You go away now, you hear? I'll call my husband from upstairs and he'll chase you. Go on.
But this is Mars. Isn't it?
This is Green Lake, Wisconsin, in the United States of America. Bounded on the east by the Atlantic and on the west by the Pacific. Now go away. Goodbye.
Horst, do you suppose it's really possible? I've got to find out more about this.
I told you I'd call my husband. Now you go away.
You've got to tell me one thing first. What year is this?
Year? 1928, of course. For goodness sake.
You hear that, Horst? And we know it's 1987. And we know this is Mars. Of course, is it possible that we got fouled up, made some tremendous blunder, circled around, and landed back on Earth?
In 1928?
Well, maybe some switch in time or dimension. Could we have shifted somehow, gone backward in time? Oh, Horst, this won't hold water. It's not logical. We checked every mile. We went past the moon, out into space. We're on Mars. Lustig out at point. Hingston in the rear. Keep that gun at half load.
Aye, sir.
Horst, there's got to be some cold, logical solution.
Captain!
What?
That house down the street, the white one with the green shutters.
Lustig, what's the matter?
I never thought of... Thank God!
Lustig! Lustig, come back here!
He's running for that house.
That crazy fool, after him, quick!
Lustig, stop!
Come down off of that porch!
Grandpa!
Lustig, what the devil do you think you're doing?
Albert!
Grandma! Grandpa, it is you.
Lustig, what is going on here?
Albert, it's been so many years.
How you've grown, boy.
It's so good to see you.
Lieutenant Lustig! Oh,
Captain, Grandma, I want you to meet my friends. This is Captain Black. Captain, I want you to meet my grandfolks.
Howdy. Any friend of Albert's is a friend of ours.
How long have you been here, Grandma?
Oh, a good many years. Ever since we died.
Ever since you what?
Oh, yes, sir. They've been dead 30 years.
What?
Oh, now, don't you trouble yourself. It's all right. We're alive again, that's all.
Do you mean to tell me that Mars is heaven?
Oh, nonsense, no. All we know is here we're alive again. And who are we to question God's infinite ways?
Well, Lustig, we're going back to the ship.
But, Captain, I want to talk to my grandfather.
Lieutenant Lustig, I don't like any part of this. You'll come back with us if I have to club you and carry you.
I see.
Now, let's go! Heaven only knows what they've run up against back at the ship. First, look at that crowd around the ship.
Looks like we're being welcomed with a celebration, Captain.
Celebration! They've abandoned ship. Every port is open. No guard set. You, masters!
Hiya, Captain. Meet my old dad. Dad, that's Captain Black. He's not a bad guy for an officer.
Hingston!
What, sir?
Bring that band back. Use force if you have to.
Excuse me, sir. There's my Uncle George.
Hingston!
I'll be right back, Captain. Uncle George!
What the devil is going on here?
Don't you understand, sir? They've all found friends and relatives.
They're all here!
You're right, Captain. I found it. The whole crew's out in the crowd.
But I gave orders. Definite orders.
You don't understand, Captain.
I understand, mutiny. I don't care how many relatives show up. I'll have discipline.
Johnny! What? Johnny, you old son of a gun!
It's you. Edward.
Yes.
It can't be.
Oh, of course it is. Johnny,
Ed,
you old...
Ed, Dr. Horst, this is my brother, Edward.
How do you do?
Hello, sir.
It's wonderful to see you, Edward. Look, I've got to get back to my ship.
Oh, Johnny, wait. I almost forgot. Mom's waiting at home.
Mom?
Yeah, and Dad, too.
Mom and Dad are alive? Then you're real, Ed.
Well, of course. Don't I feel real? How's that, huh?
Why, Ed! Ed!
We've got lunch for you, Johnny. Mom's making corn fritters.
Dr. Horst, haven't you found anybody?
No, Captain. I have nobody.
Well, then you come on home with me, right, Ed?
Why, sure.
Horst, you wouldn't believe it. But it's been 35 years since I had Mom's corn fritters. By George, 35 years.
Kitchen, so don't hold back, Johnny. You too, Dr. Horst.
Well, Johnny, you're still in the Navy, eh?
That's right, Dad. I'm in command of the ship.
We're an old Navy family, Dr. Horst. All three of our boys in the service.
Yeah, Ed was the best pilot in the Pacific, too. What did happen, Ed?
What's the difference? I'm here now.
Yeah, but...
You know, it's almost perfect. All we're missing is your brother, Will. Then the whole family could be together.
Well, it won't be long, Mom. Will's in charge of the XR-54. Next rocket coming out to Mars.
Oh. Well, little Will. When does he leave, Johnny?
Well, the takeoff's scheduled for September, but It depends on what we report.
Oh, yeah.
There's no question about that now, huh?
No.
Christmas together again. That'll be something.
Sure will, yes, sirree. Well, this calls for a celebration. How about a little of the old dandelion wine, eh, Johnny?
Now, Father, don't you go giving Johnny too much wine.
He's a big boy now, Mother. Well, sir, isn't everything just fine? Just fine.
Again, will you, Ed?
Oh, sure.
Well, Dr. Horst, what are you doing sitting over here alone? What do you think of my little family?
Very nice.
You know, I can't understand why you didn't find any folks here, Dr. Horst. It's just a shame everybody else is so happy.
Well, I never remembered my family, Mrs. Black. All I know is they were gassed at Dachau during the Second World War. When I was liberated, I was in delirium 3 months. I cannot remember anything before then. A psychiatric phenomena.
Well, that's terrible. Isn't there anything anybody can do?
I don't want to remember. I have not had a pleasant life. I prefer to be free of emotional entanglements. They interfere with a scientific approach.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Horst.
What? Oh, I'll get it.
That's our ring, long and three shorts. I remember that.
Well, maybe we'd better call it a night. You must be getting tired, Johnny.
I'd better be going back to the ship.
Nonsense. You stay the night. We insist.
I just couldn't rest thinking of you all alone on that ship.
I'll be all right. Well, good night.
Oh, wait a minute, Dr. Horst. That phone message was for you.
Me?
Yes, that's right. A message from Anna.
Anna? I don't...
Well, there, she must be an old friend. Isn't that nice?
I don't... You sure it was for me? I don't remember any Anna.
Well, she asked if you were better.
Perhaps she's someone who knew you at Dachau.
Anna?
She said she's coming over here first thing in the morning. So, you'll have to stay over.
Yes,
well,
but...
that settles it, then. You stay here, Horst. You can bunk with me in my old room.
Yeah, but, Johnny, we thought you'd like to be with Edward.
So you could talk the way you used to.
Well, we can't put Dr. Horst on the daybed. I think we'd better share the room tonight. Be plenty of time for talking, Ed.
Yes, I guess so.
Well, I suppose I better drop back to the ship. You know, Ed, security check.
What? Why do you have to do that here?
I don't know, Mom. There's no good reason, I guess. Suppose we skip it tonight, huh? Well, good night, everybody.
Oh, it's good to have you home, Johnny.
It's good to be home, Mom.
Captain Black.
Hmm?
You asleep?
No, I've been thinking about what we were expecting. Green-skinned Martians. All the time there was only Mom and Dad and Edward waiting. That's funny what tricks your imagination can play on you. Well, I guess Mars is heaven, Horst.
You know, I've been thinking about Martians, too.
Hmm?
Captain, just suppose there were Martians, and they saw us land, and suppose they thought of us as invaders. What would be the best weapon they could use against our atom bombs, huh?
I don't see what you're getting at.
They would want to disarm us first, huh? To wipe out all suspicion, to make us feel at home. Captain, suppose this house isn't real. Suppose the people are just images stolen from our own memories by Martians, created for us by telepathy.
Oh, that's the craziest theory I ever heard.
Maybe that's why there was no one for me. Because in all my life, there is no happy memory. No real loved person. Not even my mother. I don't remember her. Only the piles of rotting corpses at Dachau. There was no happy emotion for these people to recreate.
How about that phone call? Anna?
Yes, Anna. I didn't remember who she was, but I do now. I just remembered. When I was freed from Dachau, sick, delirious, I raved about a wonderful, kind nurse named Anna that took care of me.
Well, there you are. It's logical. She's coming to see you tomorrow.
But there was no Anna. I'd been nursed by a man.
What?
Anna was only a dream. And there's only one way they could have learned about her, by reading my subconscious mind.
That's impossible, Horst.
Why? The whole crew was thinking of home. Suppose the Martians read our minds.
Yes, but if there are Martians...
If there are, they have us separated. Each man in a different house, sleeping. Trusting. No one at the guns.
I left my pistol downstairs. Do you think there's something to this, Horst?
It's a perfect trap, Captain. Who would suspect his own mother? His grandparents? How easy. Just a knife in the heart of each sleeping man.
That's impossible, Horst. We've got to get back to the ship.
Listen. The crickets have stopped. Come on. We don't know when they change back to whatever they really are.
All right, careful.
Where are you going, John?
Ed. We wanted a drink of water. That's all, Ed.
You're not thirsty, John. You don't want a drink.
Look out!
You don't want it.
His face! It's changing! He's a Martian!
Run, Horst! Run!
You can't get away, John!
This way, Horst! Horst, where are you?
Can you hear me, Earth? This is Captain John Black, the XR-53, calling for Mars. I've locked myself in the ship, but they've crippled it. I can't take off or fire the guns, and they're coming for me now, the Martians. I'm all alone here. All the rest are dead. Hinkston, Lustig, Dr. Horst. Poor Horst, he didn't even reach the door. Listen. They're trying to break through the hull. Edward and Mom and Dad and all the folks. But they're changing now. They're melting and changing back into... They're Martians. Can you understand? Martians, not men. They made us think that Mars was heaven and we fell into the trap. Can you hear me, Earth? You've got to stop the next rocket. Listen, tell my brother Will. Tell my brother not to come. They'll trap him too. They'll kill them all. Hello? Hello? Can you hear me, Earth? This is John Black on Mars. Hello, Earth? This is John Black on Mars. Hello, Earth. Hello, Earth.
Tonight, X-1 has brought you the science fiction classic, Mars is Heaven, written by Ray Bradbury and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in the cast were Wendell Holmes as Captain Black and Peter Capell as Dr. Horst, with Bill Zuckert as Masters, Bill Lipton as Hinkston, Margaret Berlin as the old lady, Bill Griffiths as Edward, Ken Williams as Lustig, Ethel Everett as Mom, and Edwin Jerome as Dad. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Fred Way and is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, with a story entitled Mars is Heaven, written by Ray Bradbury on an episode of X-1, first broadcast on radio on May 8, 1955. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows, on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.